What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Monday, March 13th, 2023.
Day of the Devil.
I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Forbes 30 Under 30, a.k.a. the second best baby blues, a.k.a. New York Times quoted.
That's me.
At Tim Geddes.
It makes me giddy every time you say that, Greg.
What was he quoted? Oh, Pokemon.
Yeah.
You talked about Pokemon in the New York Times.
Oh, I had a Pokemon weekend, Greg.
You did this thing you do where you're like, I did this crazy Nintendo thing, and I just nodded like, yes, yeah. I understand all this information. This makes a lot of sense to me. Well, what happened this weekend?
So as you well know, Greg, I am a born-again Pokemon master. Mm-hmm. And
you are attempting Scarlet. To catch them all.
I am attempting slowly but surely to catch them all. Now, there are no excuses, Greg. No, especially after this weekend. No excuses. Uh-huh. So got them all in Gen 9, Scarlet and Violet, and I was like, I'm going to go back to the beginning. I'm going to play through the Let's Go games just to get the original Kanto Pokemon. And I was like, and I might just stop there. I'm probably going to stop there because the original plan was I'm going to do them all. I'm going to catch all 1,007 of these or whatever they are, right? Yeah. Going to play through all the games. And then I started looking into it. I'm like, that seems like a lot of time, but more so a lot of effort and a lot of weird-ass WNDs. All right. Weird Nintendo decisions dating back decades at this point. All right.
Sure.
Because to catch them all, you can't just buy a game and catch them all.
No.
You need like 20 different games,
sure.
15 different systems,
yep.
All this like hootenanny. All right. And on top of all of this, Nintendo's closing the 3DS eShop on March 27th. We're days away from the end of the 3DS eShop. Over the last year, you can't put money into the account anymore.
As a man who lived through the death of the PlayStation Vita eShop, I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel your pain here.
Exactly. And I'm the type of person that I traditionally, if there's something I really care about, I get it. Because I'm like, you know, like Mario 3D All-Stars. They're like, yo, it's limited. I'm like, well, I'm buying one, motherfuckers. I have that shit. I'm good. You know, because then I get stressed in later times.
Sure.
If they're like, oh, it's closed down. I'm like, oh, fuck, what do I need to get? What do I need to get?
So same reason I got 2 mint on card of every Ghostbuster action figure.
100%. You never know.
Yep.
You just never know. Or like, I saw these Jordans.
Had to get them.
I love them. Look at that blue. That's the most Tim Geddes blue ever. Bought 2 pairs. I'm looking out for future Tim.
Is that the most Tim Geddes blue? Because that's like this a midnight blue. I think of it more like the cyan kind of funny blue.
It's a common misconception. People think that the kind of funny blue is my favorite blue. It's actually, in fact, this blue.
This midnight blue. Right? This blueberry.
Yeah.
Blue
anyways, back to the 3DS, Greg.
Yeah.
All right. I started looking into this, and the problem is, for all of the 3DS and before Pokemon games, the only way to get those Pokemon transferred into the new thing, Pokemon Home, is this app called Pokemon Bank.
I've heard about that. Yes.
In addition to Pokemon Bank, to get the older games, you need an app called Pokemon Transporter. You can only get Pokemon Transporter through Pokemon Bank. So you got to download Pokemon Bank, load that in, and then it's a separate app you can download. All right, this isn't that bad. Not that bad at all, right, Greg? Here's the problem. Pokemon Bank requires a $5 fee that you pay. After March 27th, it's going to be free. But for right now, you have to pay. I don't care. $5. I could do that. But guess what? You can't add funds anymore, Greg.
Yeah.
You can't add the funds. So what are you going to do? There's a workaround. Of course there's a workaround. There's always a workaround.
Bootin'
Linux. You got to link your Nintendo Switch ID to your Nintendo 3D, whatever the hell that shit was called, Nintendo Network ID.
Yeah.
If I told you, Greg, that my entire Saturday was me sitting with multiple Switches in front of me, multiple 3DSs, 2DSs, just trying to make sure I had everything, just in case I decide to do this all one day.
Yeah.
I'm prepped, though. I'm ready. I got
appreciate it because I talked to you, I think it was Friday at the close, and you're like, it has been so stressful these past few weeks. Me and G have agreed to do nothing this weekend.
Yes.
And instead, you just stressed out over your Nintendo Switch /3DS connections.
But now I feel great. Now it's all good. I last night I slept like a baby. I was like, oh, one day I'll be able to catch them all, and I feel okay about that. I feel real okay about that. But then did I go a little bit crazy? I did, Craig. I did.
Yeah.
And let me tell you how. I started thinking this through. This is the Tim Geddes logic here. There were a couple games, Pokemon games. Every generation I always buy one of them, right? I don't need both of them.
Sure.
I choose the color that's closest to blue, and I roll with it and go from there. But then I started realizing, one day I might want to catch them all. And one day, these games are going to be out of print, no way to buy them, and now because these stores are closed, you can't buy them digitally. So I bought every fucking Pokemon game I could physically.
Wow.
Yeah. So now I'm set.
They come from eBay, Amazon? What'd you do?
Amazon. Yeah. Amazon for most of them. These 3DS games are about to skyrocket in price, something I didn't think about. Didn't think about it, Greg. You should think about it now. If there's any 3DS game you want, get it now.
I'll toss this out. A long time ago, ladies and gentlemen, I think it was the beginning of 2022, we reported on Games Daily about the stock of GameStop about to get delisted. And at the time, I said, this is a silly. If I'm not a stock person, I don't know what shit I'm talking about. You should buy this. And then, of course, you know, Reddit stock what watch and all the shit, and it went crazy, and you would have made a gajillion dollars. I'll tell you right now, you got a savings account? Empty that motherfucker. Empty it. Buy every 3DS game there is, and then just fucking when the time comes, you flip them on eBay. You're making money there. You know what I mean?
But also, let's be clear, we're not financial advisors whatsoever.
This isn't legally pending or admissible in court. Nice try, Judge Shapiro. You're not catching me. I just want you to know that this seems like a good thing. If you went and you bought a lot of Extreme Ghostbusters on, well, that was a GBA game, but they got to be limited too. Buy that, you're all set. See them throwing away a bunch of Funko Pops? It's crazy. We're going to talk about more, like the fact that Mike Howard, Snow Bike Mike, has played Dead Island 2. The Last of Us Season 2 won't cover the whole second game and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show for free at kindoffunny.com/KFGD, where you can write in with your questions, comments, and concerns about the day's news. Of course, you should go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunny, you can get each and every episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily ad-free as a video and an MP3. Of course, you could get dozens and dozens of monthly exclusive shows. You could get Kinda Feudy. You could get the Daily Gregways. You could just have fun and support us and maybe get a merch item and all this different stuff, all on patreon.com/kindoffunny. But I digress. If you want to support us for free, you can watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames or youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight later for everybody watching on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. If you wanted another free way to support, use the creator code Kind of Funny on the Epic Game Store or Fortnite on your PlayStation. I was going to say Rumbleverse, rest in peace, on your Xbox, but you know, it's gone now forever. Anything that uses the Epic creator code, toss in a Kind of Funny, and we get a few bucks, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Nice.
Housekeeping for you. The Kind of Funny Game Showcase returns as a mega stream, 7 hours featuring 14 games 1 week from today. That's right, it is GDC week, March 20th, starting at 10 a.m. Pacific. So no Games Daily that day. We will kick off a 7-hour stream featuring 14 video games, hanging out, having fun, and just partying. We're going to party. We're going to drink. It's going to be like, it's the showcase idea of us using our platform in the amazing studio, the spare bedroom for it. But it's also the old 2015 GDC showcase idea of Patreon, where it's just going to be anarchy. If people just come and going, you got friends there, we'll party, we'll have a good thing. Me and Mike are going to play a boxing game. We're going to wear some headgear. Mike, I got to order this still. Don't let me forget. More housekeeping for you. For weeks now, Andy has carried Mike and Nick through the lands between in their seamless co-op Elden Ring playthrough. Join them this Friday as Andy puts his sanity and possibly his health on the line as they try to play all day long with your help during their Elden Ring mini marathon stream. That is this Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Wednesday for the stream, Greg, that's me, and Mike, he's over there, are going to check out the Two Point Campus Ghost Hunting DLC. Ghost Hunting. There is no busting. This is legally distinct, and I'm very excited. Our Last of Us HBO breakdown for the finale is up right now on the screencast feed for podcasts and youtube.com/kindoffunny. And if that wasn't enough, as soon as we end this episode of Games Daily, there'll be a 30-minute break. But then the one, the only, Neil Druckmann is joining us for a Last of Us HBO spoiler cast. You can watch us if you're watching live right now, youtube.com/kindoffunny or twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. And if you're later, it'll be up as a screencast podcast feed. It'll be up on youtube.com/kindoffunny. Lots of stuff happening today, including me thanking our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus, Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Honey, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 6 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the year was 2014. In a small city called Los Angeles, California, PlayStation held a press conference where they said, we have quite a few games to talk about, including one that'll be coming out in the second quarter of 2015. And that game, ladies and gentlemen, was Dead Island 2. Since then, holy fucking shit, has it been a long journey to get to 2023! nearly a decade later, but this game is real. You can play it. And the host of the Kinda Funny X-Cast, the one, the only, the master of hype, Snowbike Mike, has played it. Hello, Mike Howard.
Craig Miller, what up, big dog? I missed you, homie. It's good to see you, Tim.
What's
as
up,
always,
buddy?
It's a pleasure, big dog. Yeah, Craig Miller, I got to play Dead Island 2, and it is for sure real, and it took me back to a better time.
Okay.
2011 through 2013. Dead Island 1 and Dead Island
over
Good
a
time.
Decade ago, baby.
I'll tell you what, it brought me back to those good old Xbox 360 days. And yeah, I got the opportunity to go hands-on with the game. A six-hour opportunity to play as much as you want for 6 hours.
Six hours, wow.
A certain amount of missions that we could do. But I could go get lost in L.A. I like showing off my yams, but
get them up there.
Want me to get the yams out, you know what I mean? But I got to go around and have some fun. So I explored for about 4.5 hours, playing as much as the game allowed me to play.
Okay.
And I went out and explored and had a ton of fun with it. So it's very interesting because this game feels like Dead Island 1, right? If you've played Dead Island 1 or if you've played Dead Island Riptide, you're going to know what I'm talking about. It feels like a 2013 game, right? We are transported back.
Okay.
And there's some positives, some negatives about that, right? On the positive side,
it's been a decade.
It's been a decade.
Different developer.
Multiple different developers.
Multiple different developers.
But we've seen some, you know, progress, right? The game looks better. And the detail is in there. The world of L.A. is really, really cool. I prefer that over other zombie games that we've seen, right? This is something we all know. It's colorful. It's bright. It's a lot of fun to see. And they've made it now, instead of one giant open world, it's broken down into small districts that
open
have
zones.
All a bunch of open zones and cool detail, right? So we started off in the Hollywood Hills,
okay,
and we had some fun exploring that, right? You go up, you survive a plane crash, you follow this Hollywood actress up to her mansion, and that's kind of home base to start the game. And from there, you get to explore the hills and then move down into Beverly Hills. And so,
question
those are the
me,
two
I'm
zones
sorry. If you said it's a lot like Dead Island, and the thing, of course, that I will never forget about Dead Island, a game I enjoyed, and Riptide that I enjoyed, despite all its flaws, was even a decade ago, how fucking slow it was to search every goddamn piece of luggage. Is it slow as shit?
I am happy to report that it is much faster now to loot and grab everything, right? And so I really enjoyed, first off, the detail of L.A. I thought they did a really good job. And now breaking into smaller zones, that allowed for a little bit more detail to put in. A lot of the rooms are explorable, right? You're not going to run into just doorways and walls that you just look at and go, oh, can't go past that. I guess that's just a no-go zone. There's a lot of places to explore. Now, will you get awesome loot, Greg? Probably not. Most of the time, you're just going to get spare scraps and other materials to build. Of course, if you know Dead Island, you know that crafting is going to be a big part of this, and crafting has returned. Of course, I'm going to make a bat that has a flamethrower on the end of
it. Sure.
I got
an old
spike
saw blade
that's
on
got
it,
a nice electrical pokey in there.
Of course.
So it's well worth your time to go explore, but the detail is what got me, right? I go into the Hollywood Hills. I'm at this cool streamer mansion, and it is decked out with everything you want, from neon lights to a bowling alley. Every room felt like it was worth my time to go explore and see what they put in. That's what I really liked about it. Then on top of that, the zombies. Now, there's some good and some bad. Did I kill the same zombie wearing the same t-shirt 1,000 times?
Sure.
Of course I did. But what they did with the zombies' flesh and bone mechanics is really, really interesting because as I beat down the zombies, it was really, really fun to see the flesh fall off their face, to smack their legs and their leg break and then fall down, right, and become immobilized. Like, that was really well thought out and really, really well done. We've seen it in other games. It's not new. It's not an insane take, but it's fresh in the Dead Island world, especially after a decade, right? It's nice to see us kind of progress and where we're going with that. So I really loved that. On the flip side, combat feels slow. It feels old, right? That's the issue, is it's been done better in other games, especially when we're living in a world of Dying Light and Dying Light 2, where they really put traversal and combat at the forefront. This feels like traversal and combat have just stuck the same. Did I feel slow the entire time running through these open worlds? Of course I did, right? Does it feel the same as I swing back and forth? Yes, that's totally what it felt like, right? And that's all right.
Sometimes, is this game fun, Mike?
Because you're out.
Is the game fun? It's the question.
Around.
Get off the, you're
Greg
right in
Miller,
the middle.
Here's where it's at. If this was 2011 or 13, this would be fun. In 2023, this was not fun.
Oh.
Right? To me, this wasn't like a, I got to shut everything down and do this. Now, sure. People are going to find enjoyment in this, right? People love zoning out and just mindlessly hacking and slashing zombies. But what I was looking for from Dead Island 2 a decade later was elevation. I was looking for you to bring something new, something fresh to it.
It sucks because we're watching gameplay right now if you're an audio listener, and like this looks good.
Yes, yeah. The game looks pretty, right? That's what I said. The detail is there. The game looks good. It runs well, right? But the issue is you're doing the same thing from 2013.
Yeah.
And people are going to like that, right? We just played Dying Light 2, and it's very similar combat,
but Dying Light's faster.
But Dying Light has the parkour. It has all these different mechanics in there.
So that's what I should do. Because I'm looking at this, and I'm like, man, I could go for a game like this. I should just go back, and I should do the DLC and everything else for Dying Light 2.
Yeah, you should, if that's what you enjoy. See, for me, I'm going to play this game because I like L.A., right? I love the detail of what was going on here.
I didn't like the drab world of Dying Light.
I get what Mike's saying. You see this? And I'm like,
I definitely like this world better than the Dying Light 2 world.
Yes, exactly. And so that was my conundrum that I was put in while I was playing this, of like, man, this feels old. It feels like a 2013 Xbox 360 game.
Sure.
Like, they're not bringing anything super new and fresh, but they've evolved upon the small things, right? The detail that you're seeing beating down the zombies just looks like that. But that's what you're going to do for quite some time in this game. Reading up on it looks like it's going to be a smaller experience, more about 20 hours, right?
Oh, okay.
There's 6 different slayers to choose from. So just like in classic Dying Light, Or Dead Island fashion, choose your favorite character. Each has their own abilities. Each has their own pros and cons. Each are going to bring a little bit different dialogue to it. Also, that's always fun to choose.
Did you feel like
want.
If you, as you like level up, because it's an RPG, right, that it would get more fun, more fast?
So we'll see how that goes, right? So the leveling system is hidden behind a flashy card system, which it's still just a skill tree, but now we've just put cards as the choosing of your skills, right?
That.
Everybody likes to, they're playing with ways to elevate a skill tree, and I appreciate that you put a little set dressing on it, but you're going to have a skill tree that will be broken down into different parts, right? Your basic skills will have certain cards you can put in, and you can choose up to 5. Then there's the next level and the next level, right? All the way going up to the biggest and the baddest, and so you'll put different cards on that will make your playstyle a little bit different, right? And have some fun on that, but really, it didn't seem like anything was moving faster or the combat was getting anything different. The characters, once again, are going to make you roll your eyes, right? I ran into the social media influencer, and they said, oh, man, I'm not getting enough followers on my live stream. Do something crazy. And the do something crazy was kick the zombie off the roof. All I did was just kick a zombie 10 times. And it was not exciting in any way, shape, or form. Oh, my gosh, light these zombies on fire. There's 3 fire pits around you. You kick them into the fire pits. Not really exciting on that one, right? So that one stunk. You had another one that was reminiscent, of course, Zombieland, right? With the Bill Murray scene.
Sure, yeah.
There's
yeah.
some old wash-up actor. He's stuck upstairs with his rival. He's like, hey, young blood, come help me out. I'm too tired to get down the stairs. And you beat up 5 zombies. And then he goes, okay, cool. I'm going to bring down my electric chair. You kill 5 more zombies and he makes it, right? And so that makes you smile and have a little bit of fun. But what they were promoting was like, wacky, wild characters that you're going to be blown away with. And none of them felt like that. And sure, it's only the first 4 hours, so maybe we'll be introduced to more of that. But none of them were like, oh, wow.
If they're not bringing the heat in the first 4 hours, that is what the game is.
And so, yeah, it's like this weird blend of like, there are a bunch of games in this genre, right? The hack and slash open world zombie slaying game that you could find right now and go play. And this feels like it's the exact same Dead Island from 2011, just now with a little upgraded look, some better details, and a little bit more action to it all. But it's going to be the same game you played before.
Mike, my question for you is, with last year, we had Dying Light 2 and Saints Row.
Yes.
Right? Different games, but both games that we saw the trailers for and we're like, I don't know, there's delays, there was a lot of like, is this what's going to happen? Dying Light ends up coming out, and I would say surprised you guys.
It did.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, hey, not the best thing ever, but
fucking
hey,
awful final boss that ruined everybody's impression.
See, overstayed its welcome, little too long.
But way but better than we expected.
Yeah, good traversal, fun basic combat,
And then Saints Row, kind of a similar type situation, and then that came out and just shot the bed. Like, nobody was like defending that, at least on our side. Where do you think this one's going to fall closer to?
This is going to be higher than Saints Row, less than Dying Light 2. I think people will enjoy the world and the detail like I'm talking about, but I think people will play after 20 hours going, man, this is some kind of slow-moving game, basic combat, right? And that's fine for people, but I'm not taking serviceable. I'm looking for good to great.
Right.
And I think that's where I fall on a lot of this. I think a lot of people will look around and go, that's good enough. Or, yeah, that got the job done, right? But I'm looking for something a little bit more. It's 10 years later. Mm-hmm. We could have evolved a little bit there.
Yeah. Damn.
And so that's my Dead Island 2. Higher than Saints Row. Much higher than Saints Row.
Much higher.
I mean, it's an easy floor for that one, okay? Much higher than that. But this isn't something where I'm like, oh, drop everything when this game comes. I have to play all the way through it. We'll see on the final product if I play all the way through and I get involved.
Sure.
You know, if it's a smaller story, 10 to 20 hours, I'm into that. Mindless zombie slaying, maybe that's up your alley. But this is what you're going to get from Dead Island 1 and Riptide. It is that. So don't expect anything more.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
Mike. Thank you for your service.
For having me. It was always fun.
Before you go,
yeah,
Kind of Funny has given you and me everything.
Yes, paycheck, you guys have.
A roof over our heads. Mm-hmm. Both of us, not just you.
Endless in and out lunches.
Endless in and out things. And we are dedicated to making the best content possible.
Yes, we do.
Thursday, do you want to say fuck all of that? You drive to me. We get in my car. We drive to Sacramento to watch your Missouri Tigers in the NCAA tournament.
100%.
Fucking
for real?
We're going, baby! We're going to the tournament!
Sac Town, baby! It's the city of trees.
It's the city of trees, everybody!
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for your report, and thank you for busting your own chair. We love it. Number two on the Roper Report, ladies and gentlemen, comes from VGC's Andy Robinson, who writes, HBO's The Last of Us Season 2 won't cover all of the second game. Season 2 of HBO's The Last of Us show will not cover the entirety of The Last of Us Part 2 video game its creators have revealed. Speaking to GQ, co-creators Neil Druckmann, who's going to be up next with us here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, and Craig Mazin, discuss their plans for a second season of the show following Sunday's final episode of the hugely successful HBO adaptation. Asked if season 2 will span the entire course of the second game, Mazin replied, no way. Druckmann added, quote, it's more than one season, seemingly confirming their intention for a season 3 of the show. Asked how many seasons the second game content is intended to be told over, the pair would not confirm. Quote, you have noted correctly that we will not say how many, but more than one is factually correct, Mazin said. Earlier in the interview, the pair offered hints at how they're going to adapt The Last of Us Part 2's more complex story structure, which relies on multiple perspectives and perspective shifts. Mazin said that, like the first season, there would be some elements identical to the game and others where they would make changes. Quote, I think we know what we're doing on this one, he said. I'm not saying that in a snarky way. I'm saying that in a hopeful way. There are going to be things that are going to be different, and there are things that are going to be identical. There are things that are going to be added and enriched. There are some things that are going to be flipped. Our goal remains exactly what it was for the first season, which is to deliver a show that makes fans happy. Oh, The Last of Us Part 2 making fans happy? Craig, slow down! The pair also addressed the mixed reaction to some of the story elements of their Last of Us Part 2 video game, telling GQ that they're happy to have strong reactions to their material. Druckmann said, quote, I guess to go back to the earlier Todd Phillips quote from Craig, which is like, I don't care. How they react is how they react. That is completely outside of our control. So, how do we make the best TV show version of that story? That's the problem that we wrestle with every day, end quote. Mazin added, to the extent that the storylines move people to rage, confusion, or disappointment or anger, well, that, I suppose, is preferable to the worst possible outcome, which is indifference, end quote. Tim, I've said it before.
Mm-hmm.
You are very, very smart. That's me. When it comes to entertainment coverage.
Thank you.
We definitely
need that asterisk.
Hey, man, we all got our pros, we all got our cons on this, all right? One of the things you had said during our, of course, spoiler-filled episode-by-episode breakdowns of The Last of Us, which did everything. And, by the way, I'm sure we might spoil Last of Us Part 2 here if you know nothing about Last of Us Part 2. You had said that you definitely saw the next season not being the entire game.
Yeah, and I don't think that is that wild of an observation, and this isn't the first time that they've said this either.
Shut the fuck up.
But it makes a lot of sense. I think that when we look at the content of Last of Us Part 1 and Part 2, there is a significant amount more in 2. I'd say there's probably an entire game's worth more of just pure plot and things that happen. And Season 1 has shown us that they can change things or adapt things, tighten things up, kind of expand on others, and I expect them to continue that with this. I had hypothesized that they'll split the second game into two seasons, and I definitely think that there is not only multiple natural like breaking points that that could happen at, whereas part one, you could have done it. Like, it's not like it's impossible, but you could have turned it into two seasons. But I think that the choices they made at the end of the day were the correct ones of let the moment speak for themselves of, about the connection between Joel and Ellie and the world and their connection to the world, and kind of having these every episode be so focused in what it was trying to do different than the ones around it, while also adding to the 9-episode arc that we got. I think you can apply that logic to a season two and a season three that are both adapting parts of part two while adding as well. You look at the Bill episode of the season, and I think that there are multiple characters in part two that they could do that for. When we even talk about the Kansas City scenario in the show, I forget her name, but the leader. The leader.
I want to say Margaret. That doesn't sound right, though.
The sect there. I can really imagine that
Kathleen.
Yes.
Thank you, Kathleen Itzel.
I can see more episodes like that, kind of going through many different characters, many different factions that exist in part two. And that really excites me. And I feel like they're kind of at a point now where season one was the proof to the world that Last of Us actually is as good as we've all given it credit for. And I think that they've succeeded in that. I think now that they can kind of take their foot off the brake a little bit and get a little bit more into the story that they want to tell and like take a little bit more time. Like, I'm sure that Neil, Craig, and the entire team are now like, what do we want to do? The world is ours. The HBO will give them anything they want at this point. Not that they already hadn't.
And
right?
HBO is also probably begging them to make this as many seasons as you possibly fucking can.
Yeah, but HBO also isn't
I don't mean like, they actually are being like AMC or whatever, but they love money and they love the reaction they're getting. And like, sure. So how can we make this longer?
But I do think that like this, we're in a kind of best case scenario where the creators want to make more, the fans want to see more, and HBO wants to support more because of how well the show's doing. Like, you don't always get that perfect combo. And from everything Neil has ever done, I don't think it's going to outstay its welcome.
No,
I think that very much, like, if there is more, it's going to be because it feels authentic.
I don't think you're going to go through a Game of Thrones looking glass, right, where Last of Us Part 3 starts as an HBO thing rather than a game.
I don't either. Yeah, definitely not. And like I've said a million times, I actually think that season four is going to be factions before we get to a part three. Like, I think it might be more of an anthology type season where it is diving into characters we either are familiar with or aren't familiar with to build out the world even more to then get to eventually whatever part three of the game is. Where start looking at the timeline on this, right? There's no way we're getting this next year. They haven't even started shooting this. We know that they started shooting Last of Us Part 1 years ago. The pandemic happened. There's been a lot in the way. But I imagine that we're going to get seasons 2 and 3 back-to-back year after year.
So, you film at the same time?
I don't know if that, maybe parts, but I think it'll be less at the same time and more just like traditional TV is done, where it is kind of like segmented, but like with the understanding of it'll definitely be written closer together. The pre-production stuff, I think, is going to move a lot faster. And because of the characters in the worlds, we know that a lot of the characters are going to be throughout a lot of the story for, you imagine, both parts of the season. So I think that we're looking at a late 2024, early 2025 season two, and then 1 year after that, the season three. By then, factions will have been out, the game. So
don't get ahead of yourself. I've heard that before.
I mean, I believe it, though.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I think that with that, we don't know what that looks like, but they've talked so much about the ambition of that game and like how it's going to meld story and multiplayer. Like, my gut tells me that that's going to be the type of game that Tim Geddes has to play. Mm. And that's saying a lot because that multiplayer stuff is not for me, but I think that it's not going to be, oh, well, Titanfall had a story, Titanfall 1. I think it's going to be more like embedded actual narrative and character in the multiplayer to a point that there'll be stuff to be able to take from for a season of the show. And then eventually Last of Us 3 is happening.
Of course.
And I imagine we'll get it, I don't know, within by 2028.
Okay. Okay.
Exciting, man. I love it. We're
my question
great
for
time.
You is, Barrett shakes his head. He says 2028. You don't buy, Barrett?
No shot.
We'll see. We'll see what Naughty Dog's working on beyond this factions deal and go from there. Mm-hmm. I do think 20. I mean, whatever. I could see. I think by 2030 you'll have it for sure.
I mean, yeah, sure, whatever.
Like, hey, whoa.
No. I'm just saying they'll announce it. Like, it'll be announced for 2028, and then it may or may not hit it, whether or not we have another global pandemic.
As I've said before, ladies and gentlemen, spoilers for The Last of Us Part 2. So this is your chance to mute or whatever. We'll tap our heads or Barrett will flash something. Where do you think do you think it's just like the game? Do you think the break comes that we have the final climactic moment in the theater and then we cut and in season three is we start with Abby?
I don't. I struggle to think that they would do that because I think that
we already saw how much people hate Abby.
Yes.
So if you, again, do you want to go through that in that way? And like, do you want to, for an entire season, make her look like the devil to then give us a season where we like switch over to her?
I think it'll be a little, it'll take the, I was saying this in our screencast for the finale that you can check out on youtube.com/kindoffunny, but I really appreciate how they played with the structure of the season of The Last of Us show, and it really gave it a unique identity. And I think that Last of Us 2's structure and formatting is one of the things I enjoyed most about it. And when you look at the game, when we talk about Last of Us Part 1, we talk about winter. We talk about spring. Like the seasons were the natural breaking points in the story, so much so that they got title cards, right?
Yeah.
And I remember going into Last of Us 2 and being like, what's that going to be? Like, what's their kind of formatting going to look like? And them using the different days and the locations as well to kind of, like, show where we're at, I thought was a really wise way of being able to play through two perspectives of not the same story, two separate stories happening that interconnect in some way, in a lot of major ways, but they're also doing very separate things. And then also that allows for even longer flashbacks to occur that can be their own episodes to themselves or whatever. But because of that, I think that they could play with that structuring a lot more than part one, because it's because they have the days that they can rely on. And again, in the show, there wasn't a winner title card. It just happened. You know, like they didn't structure it that way.
Yeah.
They were able to do it differently. I think the show can work the same way where they, for season two, can take different bits and put them together. I think we'll get a much more mixed throughout season two of the show before going into season three.
Interesting.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to tell you how they'll do it. I think they have to do it that way. Because again, I don't think you can do the entire season one the way it happened in the Ellie part of the game and then have it be that season three picks up with Abby and not have people be like, I fucking hate Abby. Why am I here?
Yeah.
Like you need to, and I think that, you know, they did such a good job throughout season one of, you know, giving us antagonists and also giving us a glimpse at why they're like that. And so maybe even if you don't agree with them or whatever, like you're still cheering for Joel and Ellie, you are like, I get why you're this way. I get why you're what you're trying to do here.
Now, isn't that the point, though, of The Last of Us Part Two, at least how Neil has talked about it, where he wants you to start off from a place of hate to then slowly think more and more of where they're coming from their story?
I do, but I think they sprinkled that into this season the first time by fleshing out characters more. And like even like David, who obviously is reprehensible, but like you see his community and how they rely on him, and you can kind of be like, I can see why you're eating people, I guess, or what, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying like they gave you those windows that I think it would be hard to go this way with Last of Us Part Two and have it be that we don't understand what Abby's motivation is and why she's like this.
Yeah. And to Barrett's point, just the devil's advocate of where we're driving at here is I do think that Abby, like us not liking Abby or being against her because of what she did to characters we love so immediately, I think is the point of Last of Us 2 and us hating her. And then eventually like, wait, do we hate Ellie? Like that whole thing is like the point. So I can imagine them keeping the point. Like I do think there's a world where season two and three of the shows are the
exactly the same,
plot wise and pacing wise as the games, because I mean, why are we going to treat TV watchers as like dumber than gamers? They didn't, you know, and sure there was a lot of people upset about it, but there was a lot of people that weren't upset about it. And because they committed, it made a very special piece of art. I can see Neil and Craig being like, yeah, we're going to do that. And you know, that's where the HBO might push back, but that's all hypothesizing. Like if they commit to their vision, I think it could be extremely powerful for
my thought on that. And again, I don't know shit, right? I don't create award winning video games or shows, as I'm sure the show will clean up fucking season one of Emmys and stuff like that. But my thought there would be that, and I'm not exactly using it. I know this gets thrown around a lot. I know we've talked about it before and stuff, but I kind of go back to the Negan showing up in The Walking Dead, where it is like TV is much more disposable. Even though it's not free HBO, it is, you don't think about what money, the sunk cost of it is. So I could see it be that you go all the way, I hate Abby, and then we get to a season, like, this season's all about Abby. And people are like, oh, fuck that, I don't want to. Like, I don't need to. Video games, by the time we got to that point, what, you're 12 hours in, 8 hours in, you know, we're gamers, we want to see what's up, we know who Naughty Dog is, we want to see this story end, yada, yada, yada. Whereas I feel like if you got there into in a show, I could see more people being like, oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that that's the type of brave commitment that makes sure. Last of Us special. And sure. Again, I don't think they're going to go that way, but I wouldn't be shocked if
of
they
course,
did.
Of course, me neither.
I think that like looking at the game, it's impossible to translate gameplay to TV perfectly. Like that's why they're different. And I think that playing as Ellie in Winter, it felt so special in the game. And then you watch it, and when it's the episode is from Ellie's perspective, it doesn't feel the same as that. Like it's special for what it is, but it's not as like, it doesn't take you out of it or into it in a way of just like, oh wow, I am now this new character. And I think that playing as Abby does that, and playing as Ellie, especially in the second game, like the amount of time you're actually, you are the avatar for, or they're the avatar for you playing, I think it bonds you differently than TV just can't do that. So sure. Because of that, I expect that they'll sprinkle in the story elements to make us a little bit more like who's right, who's wrong. Because season one did such a good job of fleshing out characters. Like even like Sam and Henry, even Kathleen, all these things. It's like it built the world out in a way that everyone is bad and everyone is good. And that's not the point. And so I think that they've already set Abby up way better than the game could have with our understanding of the language of the show.
I'm a stupid moron, as I've said multiple times in the show. If anything I could see, it's that the start of season two is very much part two. And we go through and blah, blah, blah. Because I think you need that fucking insane, awesome moment of, right, I'm Tommy and this is my brother Joel. And everyone looks up. Because I think about, I got chills right there. But like on an HBO show of whatever, and Pedro Pascal being like, y'all act like you know us or something. That's because we do. And they shoot. Yeah, like,
that's
like,
the premiere.
Oh, that's the premiere, you think, right? Oh. There? Oh, okay. But I could see it being, I wouldn't say it's a premiere. I think when they want to ease us into it a bit more, because we got to introduce Dino, we got to get a whole bunch of things going on, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, though, stick with me. I think you do that, and then, you know, we get the death of him, and then I wouldn't be surprised if either the next episode, or we give the episode to mourn, and Ellie hugs the jacket and goes through the house and all that, and the episode after that, that's when you do the flashback episode of Abby, and she's hanging with her dad or whatever, and then it comes and we get introduced early of like, oh, like this girl is the doctor's kid and Joel killed the doctor, and that, like, to give us an early, like, hey, this is why she did this, so you understand early on. You can still not like her, you can still not be, but like, whatever.
Yeah,
but that's what I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah, no,
there's a reason Neil doesn't call me for advice.
But again, I think that makes sense. And I, again, at the end of the day, they have proven to me that, like, time and time again, that their vision is right. They know what they're doing, and they're going to deliver, and they're going to be able to deliver it in different mediums. And I can't wait to see how they adapt to, because
me too.
Two is such a special story to me, and like filled with such amazing characters. And if they can do for Last of Us Part Two what they did for Part One, we got an all-timer on our hands.
Can't wait.
Really quick, I just someone in the chat. It was a long time ago, but I just love the idea that they brought up of the finale for season two being the line from Abby of like, we gave you another chance and you wasted it, and then it just cuts to black, and that right there is like, phew.
Yeah,
what a way to leave that as a cliffhanger. You
we
know?
Let totally. You live.
Yeah.
Anyways, you can take off spoilers, bro, and I want to apologize personally to Shadow Fox in the Twitch chat, who said, I'm still talking about this. I want to get back to gaming news. I apologize, Shadow. Number three on the Roper Report. Nintendo thinks Zelda Tears of the Kingdom will justify its $70 price tag. This is Tom Ivan at VGC. Nintendo of America President Doug Bowser has said the company expects The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom to justify its $70 price tag. The company announced last month that the upcoming game costs $69.99, marking the first time it has charged more than $59.99 for a standard edition of a digital Switch title. In a recent interview, Nintendo's U.S. boss was asked how the platform holder reached its decision to price Tears of the Kingdom at $70. Quote, we look at what the game has to offer, Bowser told Associated Press. I think fans will find this is an incredibly full, deeply immersive experience. The price point reflects the type of experience that fans can expect when it comes to playing this particular game, end quote. After the game's price was announced, a Nintendo spokesperson suggested $70 won't necessarily be the new norm for first-party Switch software, stating that the company determines the suggested retail price of its products on a case-by-case basis. Bowser said on the matter, quote, This isn't a price point that we'll necessarily have on all our titles. It's actually a fairly common pricing model either here or in Europe or other parts of the world where the pricing may vary depending on the game itself, end quote. Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Bowser can say all he wants.
He can.
But I'm sure millions of gamers will join me in boycotting this.
Yeah. No tears in the kingdom for us. Need to let you know, Greg, I finally got my hands on a $40 copy of Metroid Prime Remastered physically. It's on the way to my house. We did it, baby. We did it.
This man makes financial decisions that are good.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, no, here we go. This isn't a surprise. What would Doug Bowser say? No. This ain't going to
be. Yeah, we fucked up. Sorry, guys.
My bad. No, but also on top of that, like I know that there's a lot of nuance to this conversation and the value of a game and XYZ. And to everybody, it's something different. I look at this and I buy it. I get it. I understand why they're doing this. And I understand that they can do this because of what they're promising with this game. There's a promise here. And I think that they're going to meet that. And Nintendo's always had a different price scale compared to the other guys throughout the generations. When I remember back in the GameCube days, like there'd be games that were cheaper on GameCube and Game Boy Advance games were $30. And it was like, that was just the first party standard. And then as everything got more and more advanced, prices went up and up and up. Now, the difference is, here we are, $70 titles on next-gen PS5 and Xbox Series X games, and that comes with 4K, and that comes with HDR, and that comes with this, and all the fancy stuff. And yo, Tears of the Kingdom's just not going to have that. And I do think that there is something there that irks me, where I'm just like, I don't like that I'm paying next-gen prices for an experience that it oftentimes lets me down on a technical level.
Sure.
But on a gameplay level, it backs it up in 10 times. Like, I know what I'm going to get from Zelda. I know how many hours of, not just gameplay, of enjoyment I'm going to get from the game. So I don't think that $70 is too wild of a price for this. And also, I don't expect Nintendo to raise every game to be $70 because every game's not Tears of the Kingdom. What else? What's the next game that's going to be $70? That is what I'm really interested in. Because, yes, at some point, you get away with it enough that it does become standard.
Sure. Yeah, but for the next Mario game.
Yeah.
Is that $70? And if it isn't, do people then immediately go, well, then it's a less experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I got hundreds of hours out of Tears of the Kingdom, but this is a cheaper game. So clearly this is a budget game. And this is when, what does the narrative get wrapped up in?
Yeah, it's funny with as we've gotten just more and more and more online and more and more and more social and everybody's opinion
is equal
and matters and all this shit. Like, you look at it and the idea of like time to money value is just such a conversation. And like, if something has a short runtime, it's lesser than. Like, you look at just the amount of people I've seen being like before they even saw the episode, how are they going to do the entire finale in 45 minutes? It can't be as good. It needs to be double length or whatever. Well, they pulled it off. Could there have been more? Sure. But like, they pulled it off in the 45 minutes. Like, runtime is not an indicator of the quality of something. And anytime a Marvel movie's runtime comes out, people are like, oh shit. Like, it's how, or episode by episode of Disney Plus, like how hung up people get on this shit. And I think that with games, it's the same thing of just like, yo, more is not better. Are you enjoying the hours you're playing? How much are you enjoying those hours? That to me is where the value comes into play and what you're starting to talk about in terms of the price to gaming experience value that you're getting all the time. And every once in a while, people like try to throw this back at me as if I said something stupid, where people always say Xbox Game Pass, best value in gaming.
Sure.
And I was making an argument. It's an incredible value in gaming. And it arguably is the best value in gaming. But I remember playing Last of Us 2, and that was $60. And to me, that $60 and what I got from Last of Us 2, that's one of the best values in gaming.
Sure.
But that's just, that's what value is. It's what it is to you and what you expect to get out of something. I don't need a million different games that I can play that I'm not going to play.
Sure. I understand 100%. And I think that goes back to the old adage, right? Of like, what something's priced at, right? And what it comes down to, like, the cost is what people will pay for it. Or the worth is what people will pay for it. Based on the last Zelda game, Breath of the Wild, right? Like, I will gladly give them $70 for this.
Les will give $1,200.
Bless is a crazy person, but yeah, that is the idea of like, it'll be interesting to see how they slide this forward and what does it mean for other games and yada yada. But like, I have no doubt based on pedigree and based on just trailers and mainly just hopes and dreams, but the proven product of what Breath of the Wild is that, yeah, Tears of the Kingdom is going to be worth $70, $10 more. Sure, whatever. I fucking adored Breath of the Wild. You know what I mean? What a great time that game was. I'll never forget that. You know, it was when we got the Switches, obviously, for review and all that jazz, but then I forget what, we must have been PAX East.
You and me went, and I remember we were broken up, and at one point you passed me on the thing, and I was like, I've never had a flight go this fast.
Oh, yeah?
I've never had I'm having so much fun. I was doing the Divine Beast elephant or whatever. Like, I was having such a great time.
I told the story last week, but that same flight, I was sitting next to Daniel Dwyer, who was playing his Switch for the first time on Breath of the Wild. Like, he just booted up, and like, the whole time, it was just the two of us playing through, and it was just like, this is magic, man. Yeah. And we're about to get that magic again in just a few short months. I can't wait.
If you want magic, ladies and gentlemen, you should go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunny, you can get each and every episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily ad-free. You can get dozens and dozens of exclusive shows that are only available on patreon.com/kindoffunny, and you can often get just merch there. You can watch and record the podcast live as we record them, like we're doing with the Kind of Funny podcast this afternoon, and so much more. But I digress. You're not on patreon.com/kindoffunny, so here's a word from our sponsor.
Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. And thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. When you check out, the Honey button appears and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds, you see the fun little dancing guy. Honey searches for coupons and it finds you the best ones. And then you just watch the prices drop. We here at Kind of Funny have been using Honey for years, and it's helped us save thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to just set and forget and save. That's the best part. Honey doesn't just work on desktops. It works on your phone too. You just activate it on Safari on your phone. You save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Carlo plays, I finally got around to Odyssey to use my Switch. Was pretty bored.
Fuck you.
The fuck, Carlo? Do you have no joy in your fucking heart? Jesus Christ.
I have no other words.
Everyone's different, man, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, and some people don't deserve it. Carlo, send me your Switch. You don't deserve it. We're going to find somebody from the audience who deserves it more than you.
Switch relocation program?
You're fucking sickened me. God, that was such a failure. Remember that? I hate the Vita. Had no games. All right, cool. Send me your Vita, and we'll give it to people who want to play. Well, I'm not going to do that. Get the fuck out of here.
I don't do that.
You know what I mean? Ladies and gentlemen, let's move on to number four on the Roper Report. Over at IGN.com, Cat Bailey reports, Xbox confirms it won't be on the E3 2023 show floor. Xbox has confirmed that it will not be on the E3 2023 show floor, but signaled support for E3's Digital Week by confirming that it will be co-streaming the event when it kicks off on June 11th. In a new statement, an Xbox spokesperson told IGN, quote, "We can't wait to host our Xbox Game Showcase on June 11th, and we'll share more details later. We also look forward to co-streaming our event as part of E3 Digital and will not be on the E3 show floor," end quote. IGN first reported that Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo would not formally be taking part in E3 2023. Nintendo has since confirmed that it will be missing E3, while Xbox previously announced in January that it would be, quote, returning to Los Angeles, end quote, for its own event. Xbox's confirmation was in response to a list of questions sent by IGN on whether it would be taking part of E3's week of digital events, while asking for more clarity on the nature of its physical event, which did not receive a response from Xbox. E3's digital week will be roughly... Let me try all over this again, ladies and gentlemen. E3's digital week will roughly align with Xbox's showcase and will feature streams by Guerrilla Collective and other groups. Shocking, Timothy?
No, it's just a bummer, man. And again, broken record stuff on this. But like, I wish we lived in a world that Summer Game Fest and E3 could just get along and just be one thing. Because the advancements that both seem to be making have so many pros on each side. Like, Summer Game Fest last year was incredible as an in-person event.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But the formatting of having an actual press conference, like having the showcase, the kickoff thing, where everyone can share a stage and make announcements for their games, and then having a place that media can go to and play those games, some of those games, And the way it was presented, like, it was just awesome. Like, I feel like they nailed that approach in a way that I've never seen in the games industry. Meanwhile, we have E3. And there's a lot to say about E3 in a million different ways. But when they did their digital version, the one you hosted, where it was kind of just like, you know, you and the panelists, the GameSpot and IGN, et cetera, getting together and kind of filling the gaps in between the showcases and then teeing those up. I did appreciate it was way too long and there was way too much nothing in that. But I appreciated that E3 was finally like, we're going to have E3 is going to be a thing that we're presenting to the public, not just a place people can go.
Yeah.
And that was a great idea. It just, because things were being pulled so much and everyone's like, oh, me too, it just got too much and turned into nothing. Now we're at this point where E3 is making its physical return. And it's so easy to clown out. And it's looking at like, what's, okay, Xbox isn't there, Nintendo's not there, PlayStation's not there, what's going to be there? And that is such a valid question. Then on the flip side of that, though.
Oh, God, it's the Embracer Group.
Straight up. And, you know, we've been to so many E3s. We've seen it change and ebb and flow throughout the years. And we've seen the booths get bigger, get smaller, that what booths were changed, what is even there changed, all of that.
Yeah.
What they talked about in the last couple of weeks about what E3 is going to be this year actually sounds really exciting for the people that are going to be there from a platform perspective of them talking about their having the bar in the convention center. Pretty much all the stuff for people that go there, they're making it better. They're enhancing the experience. There's an understanding for what is going to be part of the show, the experience, what you're paying for, what media is going to be able to do, network and all that stuff. They're making it easier. They had this whole thread a couple days ago talking about how when the games industry comes to LA for E3,
yeah,
they are split between the JW Marriott, the Hilton, the this, the that, going to all these different bars. They're like, we're going to have a bar here. This could be the place. This could be where everyone hangs out and networks. And
super stuff. Smart.
And I love that. And there was so many other decisions like that they're making that I'm like, this sounds great. But if there's no games there,
games.
I know, but like that's...
I've talked about this before and I go back to, it will be different, but how different? You know what I mean? Where it's like, I've said it before, you're like, oh man, you want to go, you see the PlayStation showcase that kicks off E3, right? Or not kickoff, it's the Monday of E3. They show this awesome playthrough of The Last of Us. That's amazing. If you go to PlayStation's booth on the E3 show floor, you do not see that game. That's not what's there. You go to the behind closed doors thing over there that's like select people and yada, yada, yada.
But even then, there's a presence of PlayStation.
Sure.
It feels like, oh, this is video games. And it feels like you're in the culture of it, being at E3 and being at the PlayStation booth. Even if you're playing third-party games, like, I remember going to the PlayStation booth at my first E3, and sure, I didn't get to play whatever was being shown, Metal, I think it was. I didn't get to play Twisted Metal, but I did get to play Ultimate Marvel or Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which wasn't out yet.
But that's my thing, is I right there pump the brakes, then that's at Capcom's booth.
If
there's an Xbox, there's the Xbox showcase they're talking about right now, right? That's going to have, sure, Xbox's run of first-party titles that won't be at E3 present, but there's going to be a bunch of third-party partners that probably will have booths and be there.
But I imagine there's a lot of third parties that were...
Can't afford it.
They can't afford it.
Or they're there Jeff's thing or whatever.
Of marketing partnerships and all that stuff. It's just, we're so close and there's so many good ideas. They're just competing with each other. So I think it spreads both sides thin. And like that's just the ultimate bummer for me.
Of course.
I get it. There's so many business reasons why, but it sucks because I am excited for what E3 seems like it's going to be. I just don't think with what it has, it's going to be able to pull it off correctly. And I think that the Summer Game Fest side of things is a lot more set up where they're going to be fine. Like Jeff's created.
Well, that's like a curated thing.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels very much like E3 is like, yo, anybody, please come show some stuff here. We're going to have a bar. We're going to have a whole bunch of cool stuff, blah, blah, blah. Whereas Jeff feels like, all right, cool. I'm going to go to people. You're going to make pitches to me. I will make the choices on what goes and where.
Yeah, and it creates a very special experience. But we'll see what this year looks like. I'm excited, but
of course.
I'm not expecting them to knock it out of the park on either side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Summer Game Fest or?
Because of how much they're going to be pulling away from each other. I think both are going to be I think Summer Game Fest this year is going to be awesome. I think they're gonna nail it in terms of like a lot of things we're looking for compared to last year from a consumer perspective, and like they already nailed it from a media perspective. So I think they'll do great there. But I just think that it won't be able to reach the heights that it could if people just work together.
Okay. Well, Let's see if they work together for story number 5. You want to catch them all, and it seems like the Pokemon Company wants you to catch those NFTs. This is Chris Scullion at VGC. The Pokemon Company is hiring someone with, quote, deep knowledge of NFTs and the metaverse.
They should hire Tam. He has deep knowledge of them.
Weesh. The Pokemon Company International has posted a new job listing looking for someone with blockchain, NFT, and metaverse expertise, among other skills. The listing, for a corporate development principal, describes an instrumental role in the company's president and corporate development office. The office has a number of responsibilities, one of which involves advising Pokemon Company president and the executive leadership team on long-term strategy direction of the company. The role's duties include, quote, leading the identification, assessment, and execution of investments, strategic projects, and partnerships to support the company's long-term growth, and monitoring and assessing technology and market players and trends in gaming and media entertainment, end quote. Oof. Under a heading titled, What You'll Bring, the job listing states the preferred candidate will, among other things, have deep knowledge and understanding of Web3, including blockchain technologies, NFT, and or metaverse. It also adds that they should be deeply connected to a network of investors and entrepreneurs in the technology sectors above Web3 and metaverse, end quote.
It's so bizarre to me that it seems like the NFT metaverse stuff in the gaming sphere for a lot of the Western devs has, like, they've gotten the hint, and I feel like at the very least, like, the social response has, like, scared them, where the higher-ups are like, whoa, 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 what's that? People are upset. Like, hey, we got to change this. We got to stop this.
Yeah.
And it seems like we look at this side and the Pokemon Company, we've even heard Nintendo in some ways, separate from Pokemon Company, and then Square, all referencing NFTs in some way that sounds like, oh, we're going to get something from this that is unfortunate for us as gamers, but good for potentially. I don't even know if it's good. Good sounding to the board members over there.
Good for the bottom line.
Yeah, potentially, but we haven't seen that actually come to fruition on the gaming side, at least so far. So it's what this ends up happening or ending up as, I don't know. I don't know if it even happens. I think that there will be a reckoning soon enough, like we've been seeing, of this stuff kind of just being like, no, and there's not an audience for it. So Pokemon has found ways to succeed in many verticals, and sure, I wouldn't be surprised if they found some way to make this work for them. I am not interested in this.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, so, you know, we'll see. I'm right there with you. You kind of said everything, right? Of just like, it was interesting to see this kick up and then die out, you know, and have like DICE not have a big NFT presence at all, like versus the year before where people were so Web3 and trying to have these conversations to figure it all out. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but it seems like, yeah, for the most part, people have gotten the hint of like, oh, this isn't doing what we thought it was going to do, as it went, you know, was gangbusters this time last year, but then quickly faded out as it went to being a fad. So yeah, we'll see what it is and see what they do. But obviously, I know you'd love to go buy a Pikachu.
I know.
I'd be interested in a Porygon.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't buy a fucking Porygon. I just get a JPEG of him. I got him. Number 6 on the Roper Report. 6th and final on the Roper Report. Stalker 2 Studio claims it's been hacked by Russians and asks players to ignore leaks. This is, again, Chris Scullion at VGC. Round of applause to VGC. Crushing today's Roper Report.
Always, dude.
The Ukrainian studio behind Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl, claims it's been hacked by a group of Russians. In a statement posted to the game's official Twitter account, GSC Game World claimed that, quote, a community from a Russian social network hacked into its accounts on a collective Work with Images application and is threatening to hold the data ransom. Hold the data to ransom. According to the studio, the attack may result in hackers leaking images and potential spoilers from the game. As such, it is asking players to ignore any images or videos that leak ahead of the game's release. Quote, they are threatening to use the obtained data for blackmail and intimidation, the statement reads. This is not the first attempt to hack or leak our data, including personal information. We have been enduring constant cyber attacks for more than a year now. We have faced blackmail, acts of aggression, hacks, attempts to hurt players and fans, and efforts to damage the development process of our reputation of our company. We are a Ukrainian company, and like most Ukrainians, we have experienced many things that are much more terrifying: destroyed houses, ruined lives, and the death of our loved ones. Attempts to blackmail or intimidate us are completely futile. It adds, in the event of any leaks, we ask that you refrain from watching or distributing information about Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl. Outdated and work-in-progress materials may dilute the impression of the final idea that we have put into the game. We encourage you to stay patient and wait for the official release for the best experience possible. We believe that you will love it, end quote.
Wow.
Fuck yeah. Damn, GSC man. Game World, go get them.
What an unfortunate story, dude. That it's just so such a sad state of affairs, and for them to have to be in this position is very, very, very sad and unfortunate, and they're handling it the best they can.
Yeah, for sure, and I think, you know, an audience would rally behind that message.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for the most part.
Well, I mean, their audience.
Their audience, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the dickholes on the internet want to be a bunch of dicks, fine, but I think like it's like if I was a Stalker 2 fan or I was really anticipating that game and you put out this kind of thing, I'd be like, okay, cool, yeah. Like, and I'm running like a Stalker 2 fan site. I'd be like, all right, cool, guys, we're not going to share the website. We're not going to share the leak or whatever.
God, man. Shitty-ass situation.
A shitty-ass situation that they're handling correctly. We stand with Ukraine and we stand with not sharing these leaks. GSC, Game World. Tim?
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for when Stalker comes out on its own and the audience gets it and they see it and nothing's been ruined. But that day's so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and grop shops, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Great. Out. What? Out the day.
I didn't want to say something. Sorry.
Just borrow trauma on PC. What do you got for me?
It's funny because like the official list of upcoming software thing, which of course now embedded in my mind forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When we did the Kind of Funny Game Showcase for the first time, I didn't know it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard because I was never in that position to read it. So I just didn't know.
Now you know it so well.
And now I just know it so well. And I remember me and you standing in the streets of San Francisco, and I was the one that had to read that line. And I was just like, shit, man. I fucked it up a whole bunch. Now we're doing another Kind of Funny Game Showcase. World
stream
goes around stream. It is.
I saw a lot of people running with when we put up the initial image. Like, oh, are they bitch about these showcases being so long? Now they're gonna do one for 7 hours. Like,
I don't understand.
Motherfucker, it says stream. What do you mean it's gonna be? It's
fucking
not gonna be
reading comprehension.
All right,
man.
All right, game 310 for the showcase. Like, what it's are a you small Indiana. About? You. Rough Justice 84 on PC. I already said Burrow Trauma on PC. Rough Justice 84 on PC. Wu Ji Dao Ren, Early Access on PC, Potion Tycoon on PC, Mile High Taxi on PC, and The Life of Delta on PC and Switch. New dates for you. Bedman is coming to Guilty Gear Strive on April 6th. I know nothing about Bedman. Sounds like a superhero I could get behind. Deals of the day for you. Unpacking is $15.99 on the USPSN. Is this Bedman?
No, this is Wu Ji Dao Ren.
Oh, okay. Good art style. It looks like a little indie project.
Blanc. Oh, no, it's not like Blanc.
Oh, it looks like Steven Seagal in that one thing when he's fighting. You remember when he did that? He just pushed people around? You remember this?
Like physics? No, I don't.
What? Really? You never saw this clip? No. Old ass Steven Seagal, like, just doing like this really bad, like, demonstration. I digress. Ladies and gentlemen, we ask people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. Jordan D writes in and says, Tim said there are at 1,007 Pokemon. However, if Scarlet and Violet, we are at 1,008. After the most recent Pokemon Presents showing off two new Paradox Pokemon and the Legendaries for the DLC, we are now at 1,015 Pokemon.
Crazy. Wild.
Wild and crazy. Curious. Beam. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. This has been another episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, if you're watching live, in 28 minutes, and probably a little bit more than that, we're going to go live with our spoiler cast with Neil Druckmann about The Last of Us on HBO. You can catch that live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, youtube.com/kindoffunny. If you want to catch it later, youtube.com/kindoffunny, and of course, screencast podcast feeds, Kind of Funny Screencast. You can find it all over the map. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday on a variety of platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, of course. You can write in for free over on kindoffunny.com/KFGD. You can get this show ad-free, patreon.com/kindoffunny, where, of course, you can get all sorts of merch, dozens of exclusive episodes, and you can watch us record the Kind of Funny podcast ad-free and live this afternoon. However, you don't got any books, no big deal. Use the Epic creator code KINDOFFUNNY when you're checking out of the Epic Games Store or playing something in Fortnite and buying stuff. Of course, you can get this show, Kind of Funny Games Daily, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, podcast services around the globe. No matter where you get it, please rate it, share it, enjoy it. Tuesday, your hosts are Blessing and Andrea, probably. Andrea's still checking if she could do it. She was going to get me final word today. So maybe mystery guest. Wednesday, Blessing and me. Thursday, it says Greg and Blessing, but me and Snowbike Mike are going to the NCAA tournament in Sacramento. So we're not. I'll change that up. Don't worry about that. And then Friday, it's going to be Tim and Blessing. Like I said, if you're watching live, stick around. Snowbike Mike's going to hang out with you while we wait for Neil Druckmann to show up digitally because he's not in, you know, he's, again, Hollywood Bowl. Hollywood Tavern Drucker. On the Green. It's actually New York shit. Fuck. I don't know. Just Moosehorn Frank's all I got for Hollywood Grove. Restaurants. You know what I mean? The Grove. Right. Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.